Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to the Irish Country Living Podcast. Hello, you're very welcome back to the Irish Country Living Podcast. I'm your host, Anne O'Donoghue. This week's guest on the podcast is Michael Fortune from County Wexford. Michael is an artist and a folklorist. Michael studied art in college. He specialised particularly in photography and videography, and then folklore has been a lifelong interest for him. So the two of those obviously merge very well together when people are discussing, you know, their customs and traditions and needs to be documented. So that's really what Michael primarily does. His latest project is the Irish Dresser Project. So just like what it says in the thing, it focuses on the traditional dresser and its place in traditional Irish kitchens, and I suppose what we can learn, what dresses can tell us about, you know, the people who own them and the lives they live. Michael has been doing this project for a number of years and was inspired by his grandmother and her dresser, who's very interested in it. And he's made them into calendars, so each month has a dresser and the story around it. And the calendar also, it's a little unconventional, maybe for want of a better word, because it has folklore dates across the year, kind of as well as your usual bank holidays and all the rest of that. So May Eve, different dates around Halloween, you know, when the start of harvest would have traditionally been, the end of it, when the swallows arrive, when the cuckoo would be, you know, you can hear the cuckoo, all things like that. And so it's very interesting. I mean, you get a little bit into that and the customs and the traditions around different dates in the year. So I hope you enjoy. Michael, good morning. How are you keeping?
I'm good, and yourself? Thanks, Anne.
I'm great. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Great. I'm delighted. Yeah.
I suppose to start, Michael, as an introduction, anybody who's listening, you're in a very niche, specific area. Tell people what you do.
Yeah, I work in an area. I've got two slashes. I've got a couple of slashes after my name. I went through art college in Limerick. I'm from County Wexford, from a rural background in County Wexford. But I work in the area of, as an artist, but the area I'd work in would be video and photography. And I would be going into the area of folklore, documentary making. There would be into a few different strands to the practice that I do. At the centre of the practice that I would work on have a huge interest in people and people's lives and the ordinary, the everyday things that we take for granted. And I've been tipping away at that for 20 years. You know, we were just working, showing, recording work, working with people, producing work, showing work within gallery, film festival, that kind of very niche area for a lot of people would be a very particular area. And in the last 5 years, my mobile phone changed so much stuff. And basically, I can actually share a lot of stuff on social media in particular, on Facebook in particular, and use it as a tool for sharing and for researching work.
And Michael, what in particular kind of, I know you said you kind of came through an arts background and stuff. Was there anything in particular that drew you towards folklore?
Well, come here to me. Like so many people, I grew up with it. We were, my parents were, my father was a farm labourer in background here on the coast of Wexford. And I suppose a lot of people, like that generation, left school at 13, 14, 15, went to England, wherever there was work, they had to go for work. So even my generation were probably the first to go to third level college, you know, even second level in some ways, right? But one of the things, I suppose, maybe is because I grew up in a household where there was beliefs and old customs and old things that were practiced. And some of the stuff you just, I suppose, it seeps into you, or it gets into you. I'm not an exception in this case, but for me, I suppose, as a feeding ground or for the area that I was hugely interested in, even looking back at the work, going back through college in the mid-90s, that was always there, that interest in people. And I suppose that's always been there, that interest in people's lives. And then obviously your own connection to your own family and all first, and then your neighbours. And then literally what I've been doing for 20 years is travelling the roads of the country, recording, you know, wherever that particular work is, or wherever I get a commission to do. But just literally holding the mirror up to the lives, to people's lives, and offering a little bit of reflection.
Because folklore can be very nostalgic as well. Even you were saying that, I was thinking of my nana, and she was always on about pishogues and blessing the garden on May Eve. And it was all that kind of came to my mind there when you were saying that.
Yeah, the May Eve one was brilliant, you know, blessing it with Easter water, or the Tran water, as we call it. And you'd go out to keep the fairies away, or you put up your May bush to keep the fairies away. But so much of it came here to me, whether you believe it now or not, so much of it was around protection of the milk, protection of the animals, protection of the crops. And it was all, and sometimes we do things where queer people in Ireland, whatever, we say, I don't believe that, but, or you'll have something, you say, sure, it won't do me any harm. It'd be like a little bit of cheap insurance, you know, that kind of way.
Yeah, it doesn't cost anything. It's interesting when you said there, because obviously everyone was farming back then. A lot of it is revolved around, as you said, you know, even other things I would have seen down to people, you know, milking the cow by hand and making the cross with the foam off the milk and all that. It was all centred on that, wasn't it?
Absolutely. One of the nicest records I got was a woman in Offaly talking about that. I just remember she said to me, she says she remembers absolutely, she says she putting the milk in the, and putting the tum into the milk foam and putting on the hind leg of Nancy. She says, God bless you, Nancy. She says, I always remember that. It rings through me here still, this, that lovely saying. But of course it was. Even people lighting little fires and driving the cattle out through them, or putting up the maybush, as I said to you. Or, you know, and there's so much of our folklore, you know. And again, some of it committed me. Loads of stuff gets embellished over the years because we're embellishing it to tell neighbours or to impress, you know, tell them as yarns or to tell children, you know. That goes with the territory as well, you know. So much around protection. And sure, even now the month we're in now, sure, the month we're in Man 4, we're in September.
We're going into Derrifor.
Yeah, and we're in the middle harvest, you know, and even that's changed, you know, because probably harvest has been cut a little bit earlier nowadays due to machinery and mechanization. But we were always aware of come here to me. Without the harvest, without farming, without growing crops, we wouldn't be here. You know, yes. That's simple.
And you've done probably a lot of the country doing your recordings and documenting this. Is there differences in different places? Is there different, like, are customs localized?
Oh, completely. Yeah, you will. Now you get loads of similar stuff around, say, our fairies and our banshee and our Raz. And it's interesting the way you mentioned there about the blessing of the land. That's lovely to hear. You're County Limerick, is that right?
Yeah.
So it's great, great, great.
And people still do that. That's still very much carried on. Even because I was talking to my friends and saying, yeah, Mam would always go out still and throw a bit of holy water into the backyard. Maybe it's just, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like a bit of cheap insurance and no harm in doing it, kind of.
Yeah, I know. I find that completely, that kind of May Eve stuff. You get it in Wexford, Kilkenny, Tipperary. You get it up the country as well. Sometimes as well, certain things didn't, you know, depending on where you go. Around May Eve, for example, we'd put up the Maybush here in Wexford. I know in parts of East Limerick they did it, in parts of Tipperary they did it, East Galway up to South Ulster. While then if you go over towards Sligo and Mayo, they'd sprinkle little flowers on the doorsteps for, you know. So it's just a different take on the same kind of thing, but all around, all coming from the same place.
And I suppose for the last couple of years, Michael, a lot of your work has centred around dressers, as in the kitchen dresser.
Yeah, it's been one of the real strong strands of the work, you'd have different strands, you'd have different projects always on the go, four or five on the go. But one of them, what happened to me in the grandmother had a dresser at home, my mother had a dresser at home, it's like so many people would have had dressers in the houses at home. And I would have been photographing grannies over the years. And she passed away in 2015. And it was all October 2014. She got bad. She was 102 at the time. So she was well aged, little small two up, two down house. And she was going upstairs every night, real steep stairs in the house as well. And her legs went and she couldn't get up. And she kind of broke her heart a little bit. And I remember a nurse coming out and saying, we're going to have to move the bed downstairs and you're going to have to change the kitchen around and you're going to have to move the dresser, she says. And which she replied, like I wonder, you're going to touch me dresser, she says.
whatever was happening, the dresser wasn't moving an inch.
Dresser was staying. So she made the decision and she went off and she went into the hospital and she passed away. She passed away a couple of weeks later, maybe 2 months later on. She passed away. And I kind of had it at the back of my mind. I was always aware that there were shrines for women in particular, the shrines for their lives, that everything in this thing was centered the woman. This was her domain, And I went on a bit of a journey. I contacted 4 or 5 arts officers that I'd worked with around the country in Mayo, Tipperary, Carlow, Wexford and Waterford. And I went on a journey. I documented over 100 dressers, but I recorded the people, who made them, and why they were made and why they were important in people's lives. And we did a little exhibitions, local exhibitions around those counties. But, you know, loads of things cropped up, came back. One of the things was loads of them were wedding present dressers. There were loads of men made loads for their... There was a tradition of men making dressers for their wives, you know. And that's a lovely thing. And I've come across that, the length and breadth of the country, right? And
I never knew that, Michael. I never heard that before. That, like, it would have been... A husband would have made a dresser for his wife, kind of.
Yeah, absolutely. And I came across it in Mayo first. And then when I was kind of sniffing around, I go, oh yeah, that was made as a wedding present. And you're talking a period, the periods I'm getting are from about 1890 to about 1940. There was a period there when it was really popular. Probably the 1920s, 30s was really popular. So that was a common tradition. Now, not all of them, but it will crop up. I had a lovely one there from Ross Gray there, a man made, again, sometimes as well, the husband will make it, or maybe the brother of the husband will get someone to make it for locally for them. But were you definitely for wedding presents? So last year, what I decided to do was I had all these hundreds of photographs and hard drives, and I said they're no good to anyone. We're living in the digital age, and I'd already set up the Dresser Project page on Facebook, and it was getting loads of traction. So I decided to produce just the Irish Dresser and Folklore Calendar. So what I did was I literally got some of the photographs, and just picked a month and wrote a story about who made the dresser, when it was made. And then what I did, because naturally because of the folklore background, I started to put in lovely little dates as well. Dates for maybe when the swallows came, dates to do with cuckoo farmers, and dates to do with growing your spuds or cutting meadows, all those lovely little dates that are kind of important to us. And all completely Irish. Even dates, but as you mentioned, but spreading the holy water on May Eve as well, that's on it as well. So that was last year, and I'm at it again this year for my sins.
So there's no shortage of dressers anyway for these calendars?
No, sure. Compared to me, last year I think I had something like 15, because I had one page per page. And sure, this year I did a countdown. I was designing it right as I'm talking to you, and I had some 45. So I've got my standard 12 months, one or two extra little ones thrown in with essays. And then I've got two pull-out sections, one on Cork dressers. I have 16 Cork dressers that I just documented in April and May, due to COVID. I couldn't travel. I was commissioned to do a project in Cork, couldn't travel. And sure, like using social media, as I was saying to you, people were sending me photographs. So then I was able to identify 50 dressers in Cork, and we whittled them down to a good 16. And another part of it, which makes up another 16 dressers, is I sat down one day and I was literally looking at photographs. And by chance, I said, geez, I've loads of old ones in sheds. And have a whole section of abandoned dressers, you know, ones to be left in sheds, or maybe ones to be left in houses that are falling down, and it's still have the bits and pieces left on them. So I have that in there as well. That's a bit sad now, mind you, to be fair, but it's still interesting to look at, you know.
Yeah. And what is or was the significance of the dresser in the kitchen in the Irish home? Why was it so important?
It was everything. It was the nowadays, which we're so used to having presses and fitted units and islands and all this kind of stuff, which we have ourselves. But it was where you store is where you store your cups, your plates, your knives, your forks. They were all there. That was the central point of where you put them in most homes. And the spread was from the farm labouring classes to the strong farmers, the small farmers to the big farmers, right up to the landed gentry. These dressers were always important. One lovely thing, and actually I've got a Limerick dresser in the calendar this year, and it was used for keeping a setting hens or a setting goose. And that was one thing as well. And that wasn't long ago. Like, you know, people, you'll still talk to people and they will remember having the setting hen inside. Now, if you told someone now that you had a setting hen inside in the kitchen now, to be going for the phone. But this one in Limerick is lovely. It's got little hutches or little hatches in it, and you kept them inside. and kept them away from Mr. Fox, because your goose was valuable and so were your hens. So
because obviously a lot of people probably wouldn't have seen these if they're not privy to kind of an old farmhouse. I've seen one before. I went to the Ramblin' House in Knockfearna here in Limerick. You'd love it now as well, Michael. Loads of folklore associated with the hill and everything. But like this dresser was stuffed with things. It wasn't kind of nicely, not that it wasn't nicely set up, but it looked like it was just being used with little letters stuck in here and knickknacks here. And you know, were they for show or were they practical or both?
I noticed a shift with my own grandmother's dresser, right? I found a photograph by chance from the 1970s, and everything was for practical, right? Now, the plates were there, the cups were there. She was drying the cup and putting onto the dresser. Now, obviously, you'd be throwing bills into the one drawer or throwing bits and pieces or lotto tickets up into the top corner, that kind of crack, right? But then what happened was, I noticed hers, and this happened around the country, is they shifted. They became ornaments for people, where the grandchildren would bring back a cup from their holidays or bring back something, and that would go up. So, you know, and the presses came in, then we started to have presses for cold and our cups and saucers and stuff like that. But they changed their role. I've come across the odd one or two that are still being used. Like, there's one woman in Tipperary that I recorded, and she's her dresser, a glass cabinet, she calls it, and she uses it every day of the week. But they're like hen's teeth now. They're rare enough. Now, we have a dresser here, but literally, you'd be throwing everything onto it. You know that kind of way? To be children's toys on it, but I wouldn't use it every day of the week to get a cup and a mug off it. But I'd still miss it if it was gone, though. You know that kind of way?
And I suppose from going around looking at seeing these dresses and documenting them, can you learn a lot about the lives of the people who had them? Are they a historical artefact?
Oh, completely, yeah. There's one thing which I hoped this project, and there's loads of other people working in this area as well, not a load, a good few people working, is the appreciation for the vernacular, because it was so ordinary to us. And, the little small farmhouses, you know, that we could easily take a digger to and knock them down, and then looking back in hindsight, we said, God, yes, we shouldn't have done that at all. And especially all the furniture, the forms, the settles, the dressers, all those little things, even simple things. I have a huge interest in the ordinaries, I was saying. Even the handles of spades or the handles of sprungs or of homemade walking sticks, those lovely things that we couldn't go to the shop years ago and buy everything. You know, that kind of way. We'd go to the ditch and take something off the ditch and make a handle, you know. So I think that interest in the vernacular, and that, like, I was in a house 2 days ago, and it was two bachelors lived in it, and they passed away in 1999. And the dresser, the settle, the fireplace, everything was there still. And I stepped the dresser to the fireplace, and it was exactly 8 foot. And I was in a dresser maybe about 15 miles away again, the exact same, in a house 15 miles away about 3 or 4 years ago, and it's the exact same proportions. So that vernacular thing, those vernacular houses, they're incredible, because they're just people. There's a style that developed in a locality, you know, and you'll see it. And what really strikes me is the style of even the layout of the kitchen, almost identical, even though they were miles apart. The people would have never met each other, but still that lived on. So I'd hope that people would, especially from farming backgrounds, is that appreciation of the vernacular, if they can. Now, it's committed to me, it's hard to keep as well, keep a place in order and keep it roofed and keep it dry. And, you know, that's not easy too. I'm not saying that's easy. So maybe there was support out there to do that. But I think it's important going forward. You know, I always think it's important to have some kind of connection to the past.
And I suppose you were speaking there about, you know, your interest in the ordinary, and so interested in how, I suppose, maybe everyday things were done before. Over time, Michael, does the ordinary become extraordinary? Because I suppose anybody listening to this now will be thinking, Jesus, that's the way it was and all the rest of it. You know, do we get more of an appreciation for things, I suppose, over time?
Yeah, we do. And maybe as we get older, a little bit older too as well, we kind of find that. I kind of do, especially when you have children as well and you're getting older, you do. Things mean a lot to you. Even a simple thing, like I have a little yoke down in the press down below, and all it is a little container for holding salt that my grandmother had. And it's on the kitchen table every day of the week it's used. Now, if it gets broken, it gets broken. I'm not going to cry over it, but I like it. And I think we connect back to our the people that came before us, you know, especially grandparents and parents. We can connect back with them through a simple thing, through an object. And that's the great thing about it. And we don't have to go to a museum to appreciate that. We can actually pick up a sprung or pick, like, traditionally track, you know, or pick up a sprung, or even have a tractor, you know, the first 35 or the 135 to come, you know, or the Grey Fergie. Those things were connected into your grandfather that bought that 1955, you know, that kind of way. And it's really strong within the community. It's really strong within in rural communities. It's really strong within the farming community. And as I said to you, you can go from a sprung or a shovel or something that belonged, or a hammer that someone used, to the tractor that first came into the farm in 1950 something, you know. And that's something as well, you know. There's reasons why we connect to these things, you know, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah. And do you think people have enough of an interest in the past, I suppose, preserve these traditions and things, you know, to think, I suppose, even the next generation will have an interest in keeping these traditions alive and, you know, passing on this information?
I think there's something inside us that will carry on. Like if you would have asked me when I was, I suppose I had an interest in history and things when I was younger, but you would have asked me when I was 15 or 16, I probably wouldn't have been saying this, you know, that kind of way, you know, just maybe with time it does. I certainly think it will be the case within rural communities, within farming communities, absolutely, you know. I'm all on for contemporary living and making life easier, like we're chatting here now on Teams here this morning, which is brilliant. But, you know, having that little tiny grasp of the past is really important. I think it settles us going forward.
But I can tell you it's alive and well in Wexford anyway, because I went to visit friends in Wexford recently, and this is, I'm showing myself up now saying this, but they said something about Father Murphy and, you know, the Battle of Vinegar Hill and everything, and they figured out very quickly I didn't know a lot. I didn't know the full story. Well, wasn't I brought up to Vinegar Hill the next morning and the whole thing, and the Father Murphy said, and I wasn't allowed home out of Wexford without knowing the whole thing. So I think it's, but you're doing well anyway, Michael.
Grand, yeah, good, yeah, it's in there. Come here to me, all it is yeah, I suppose if people on the ground it's in the nature, it's in people. But come here to me, listen, we're in an age now where, I think we're all getting, once people see it and see the value in those conversations, it can find its own feet, if that makes sense.
And Michael, in your calendars as well, you mentioned earlier that you had all the folklore dates in it.
Yeah.
I suppose because I think October, would you agree, is a particular month for folklore, I suppose, with Halloween and, you know, surrounding all that?
Yeah, absolutely, completely. You've nailed it. There's the Halloween, the two pivotal points in my year anyway, and I suppose so many within the farming year, is the 1st of May, as you said at the start, blessing the land, because your crops and your land, and then you come down to the end, you've come through, your crops have grown, you've harvested your crops, you've put everything into the sheds, all the bales are in the sheds now, silage wrapped up, and even what it was like years ago, but you come now to the 31st of October and the 1st of November, you're going into the winter, and you have to have everything in order by then. So you're going from, it's one the twist, you're going from the light in May, and you're going right into the dark, then back into the dark and depths of winter. So there's so much around that. Around Halloween, there's so much around divination, around your future, around games. Like, sure, even you probably played it yourself, you know, you played games at Halloween where you would, the flower game, or maybe the game, did you play that in Limerick? I came across people in Limerick City who played it, where you put the saucers. Oh yeah. You can put and you can put the saucers on the table. You blindfold you, and you can put your hands in. You know, if you're going to put your hand in water, you're going to emigrate. If you put your hand in clay, you're going to die. And all this kind of crap, right? Or even putting a ring in a barn brack. That's a classic divination game. You know, years ago they would have put maybe a rag or a pea or a piece of a stick. You know, nowadays we all want to get married, but back then it was much. You know, there was much more variation to what you could do. So that kind of stuff. All those games are important. Actually, there's loads of stuff around it. We also remember the dead at Halloween, like, well, obviously dressing up and mumming and or dressing up and going out Halloween night was always the big thing. Calling to your neighbours, dressing up in your masks and getting sweets and getting called cannon. Even called cannon was a classic one, you know. My mother, they always in our house, always a pot of called cannon made on Halloween night, you know. And if anyone called around, to get a plate of called cannon, and that's typically you'd use up again your spuds and your onions, your cabbage. And in Wexford, we always put parsnip in it. In our part, and we always put parsnip in it. So you use whatever root vegetables you had that time of the year, you know.
You even mentioned the harvest there earlier. And actually, I was flicking through your last year's calendar. And I was looking at Manfor and Therefor, September and October. And you had marked in one of the days, you know, one of them was middle harvest and Therefor was end of the harvest. And even though I know that Man means middle and Dera means end, I'd never copped that Four referred to the harvest or the autumn. I actually went up looking in a dictionary then afterwards, my man's English Irish, but I'd never had that, never entered my head in all my years of school in Irish or anything.
I know, that's the gas thing about it, I suppose, it's just that those, yeah, just shining that little light but yeah, you're right, it's funny, we so busy with our lives, we take things for granted, you know, as well, you know, we just, you know, we don't have all the time, not all of us have the time in the world to go pondering like me about these jokes, but it's nice to be able to highlight them and for the penny to drop. Yeah, there's loads around. Oh god, remembering the dead at Halloween as well, and blessing the graves and the All Souls and all that kind of stuff as well, but definitely so much around going in. There was one lovely tradition around this time of the year, was the colleague, they called it, or different names. It was the last sheaf in the field, and sometimes I came across it in County Down, where you'd tie a knot on it and you'd cut it. Sometimes it was cut ceremonially, more times it was just cut and brought in. And like the St. Bridget's cross, it was hung on the wall, and it was, the idea was that you'd hang it up in the wall or maybe over the ceiling. It was a good luck kind of associated with having food over the winter, and then come to spring, then you'd feed it to the cattle or feed it to the horses and get rid of it then. Yeah.
I've never heard that before. That's very interesting.
Yeah, look around. I came across versions of it here in Wexford. There's photographs of the colleague being cut up in Ulster, still in County Down. It was done around, it's faded, but now obviously to come here to me, everything is not manual now, it's all machine, so you wouldn't have times for doing that. But it was the last one, that was the last sheaf in the field. You think about it, when you go into a field now, whether it's 4 or 5 acres and cutting that by hand, geez, with some work, now you do it in a few minutes, like, you know, you'd be gone, like, yeah.
Yeah. Michael, before I finish up, what's your favourite folklore date in the year? Do you have anyone in particular that kind of sticks in your mind or that you really like?
I do. I have to admit, I'm going back to me 1st of May. I love the 1st of May. I love the start of summer and that everything's growing and we're the light's changing and we've got a bit more light in the years. And I love putting up the Maybush with my own children here and encouraging other people to put up the Maybush. And and the summer is coming.
And what's putting up the Maybush now? I've never heard of that one before.
The Maybush was a little, they kind of depended, it was a little, usually a slip of whitethorn or maybe a bit of a furze bush. And the farming community will anyways remember, the older people will remember, still done, like you'd stick it on top of a pile of dung was the place for all play. And you decorate it with eggshells and ribbons and primroses. Most of the young girls did it. And sometimes you'd use a bit of furze or up on a height. And I only recorded a man in Carlow there, a farming man at the back of the hill, hit me here, and he puts it up to keep the fairies away, he says. It protected the milk, it kept the fairies away from the milk yield and protected the cattle. And that was the kind of idea of it, you know. Nowadays, we put it up, we've hundreds gone up here in Wexford now. They would do a thing called the Wexford Maybush Festival. Myself and my other half started it. And people put them up in schools and all that. And it's like putting up a Christmas tree. We don't know why we did it, but we did it, you know, that kind of way, because we enjoy doing it, you know. That's what a Maybush is. They use Mountain Ash or Rowan in the parts of Tipperary as well. But look, to have a little check around Limerick, I guarantee you, I remember recording a woman here from Limerick, East Limerick, and she remembers doing it years ago as a child. Yeah.
I'll have to do one this year. Michael, if anyone is looking for a calendar coming into, we're going into 2022 now, where could they find it?
Yeah, they can buy directly from me. It's online. That's where we sold most of them last year. It's at thedresserproject.ie. So it's thedresserproject.ie. The website will come at the end of September. It'll be open for sales come the end of September. And you can just buy them through PayPal or through the usual kind of online stuff, and it'll be posted out to you. So I really, really appreciate it if people bought them. We had to do 3 prints last year. We sold out. I did 1 print and then I went to a 2nd and a 3rd. But I'm starting a bit earlier this year, so...
And your own website with all your normal folklore stuff is folklore.ie.
Yeah, folklore.ie. And you follow me if you want to follow me on Facebook under facebook.com/folklore.ie. That's where you'll get to see a lot of and hear a lot of this stuff. And it's a great page because I put up something and straight away someone from Tipperary or someone from Roscommon will chirp in and go, "We that version, we call it that, or we call it the other." And that's what's great about it as well. It's a great handy little tool.
Well, Michael, thank you very much for speaking with me this morning. I'll be getting my Maybush ready for next year anyway.
Brilliant, good stuff, lovely. Listen, thanks a million, Anne, for your time.
The Irish Country Living Podcast.